Who burnt their couch last night? Was that one of you? I got a little wild last night. You know, I've been doing international... Do I get to keep this, actually? Oh, this is so great. Really. I've been doing international ministry for over 30 years now. And I've learned a lot of things from the global church. I wanted to share some of those things with you. And I've, you know, I've been able to do a lot of things. I've eaten a lot of interesting foods. I had bamboo rat once in China. Had a nice brown sauce in. But it was hard to eat with chopsticks. There's very little bones in a rat. So, but I've had that. I've had grasshoppers. I've had smashed caterpillars. Those are quite salty. I've had whale that's quite chewy. Reindeer meatballs. And one that's really hard to get down is sautéed pork fat. I don't know if you've ever just had butter with fat of pig fat. And try to shove that down your throat. It's very hard. I've had a thing called soca wheel. Now, that's a funny one. You go to the Huasteca region of Mexico, and they basically get a flour sack, and they put a bunch of masa, which is what you make tamales out of. And you fill it up, and you take 5 chickens, the whole thing, except for the feathers. They pluck the feathers, but the rest, they just leave it, and they drop it in there. They bury it underground and cook it for 24 hours. And then they pull it out, and it's like gelatin, this mass of glubby, glubby, glubby stuff. And they eat it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner till it's gone, which is for days, and it's terrible, okay? So, and then the worst one ever, there was a big plate that was like a pizza plate, and they had a big piece of bread, like naan, kind of a giant naan Indian bread, thin bread. It was so icy. I mean, I could see the ice on it, on the bread. And then they took this kind of meat stuff, and it was mushy, and they put it on there and spread it. It was mushed pancreas and kidney meat that they spread on there. And then they loved it so much. They, like, took their hands, and then they'd get the bread and grab the meat, and they're all... And then they're licking it, like... And then they put their hands back in there, and it's fun stuff. I've made a lot of mistakes with language when I was learning Spanish. You know, I thought I was saying I'm embarrassed, but I kept telling people I was pregnant all the time. And I did a sermon in Uruguay once, and I thought I was speaking about spiritual gifts. I was telling, God has given us all gifts and different gifts to use for the Lord, and use your gifts, everyone, come on, you know. And it was a very exciting sermon, except I thought I was saying gift, which is doné, but in Spanish, it's a donut is dona, and I kept saying dona. So I was saying, God has given you spiritual donuts, and everyone's been given a donut, and use your donuts for God's glory through the whole sermon. The funniest, though, was not us. We were in an airport in Monterrey, Mexico, and there was a team that was there, a short-term team that didn't go with Merge. We know this for sure. And they were leaving Monterrey, and they had a T-shirt. You know how a lot of teams, they make these T-shirts? That's really obnoxious. And then, they were in a place, Monterrey is very warm in the summer, you know, like 105, 106 degrees. So they made shirts they thought that said, you know, I'm hot. It's, you know. But in Spanish, they put, soy caliente. That's not really what you say in Spanish. It means I'm horny, okay? And they were leaving, and my staff couldn't help it. They went up, they said, do you know what that really means? I'm horny. We wore these for a VBS for a whole week in front of the kids. It's terrible. I've gone to worship services, like in Taiwan. I went to a prayer service that started at 7, and the pastor said something. The whole congregation started praying. And they went, and it was 8, and it was 9. And then right at 10 o'clock, everyone stopped and went home. I still have no idea what happened during that whole service. If you ever go to a worship service in Congo, it's about 8 hours long, okay? And there's multiple sermons and multiple things that goes on and on. And in Jamaica once, the first time that I preached in Jamaica, now I know better, but I was preaching and no one was really getting into it. But then I guess later in the sermon, they got more into it. And the band in Jamaica, they would just stay up there. They don't come down. They just stay with their instruments. And I must have said something really, wow, okay, or something. I don't know what. I said something, and just when I was done saying it, the keyboard player went, dun, 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 dun. I mean, he scared me. I thought, it's the rapture. What's happening right now? and like, and then the drummers, and like, so then as you're preaching, you're not preaching for the people or for God anymore. You're preaching trying to get them to play and do things back there because they're into it. I've been scared. I remember driving in Guatemala around it. I went around a mountain turn, and I saw a bus going backwards down a hill. It hit the side of a cliff. It started rolling, and it was on at the top, on its top, and a big cliff ravine was right there, and it was tipping. And I stopped my car. I'm the only one around. The bus driver actually ran away. I went to the back, and it was full of just women and children screaming. And I've never seen people with their eyes, like, ultra huge. They were so frightened. I made a mistake. I didn't know what to do. I broke the windows in the back and started yelling, "Give me your children." But everyone started crushing towards the back. And the bus is tipping because people are moving. And finally, a couple other people come by, and we're getting all the kids out of the bus. And we were able to get people out, but they're not everybody got out. That was scary. I remember being in Mexico when the drug cartel took over the town that we were in, and they killed police in the police station, and we hid and barricaded ourselves in a house, and my son was only 10 months old at the time. I remember being really scared. I didn't really feel like I had a lot of faith. I was just really scared. And after about 6 hours getting in my truck, and we just drove through back roads to try to get out of town, we obviously made it, but it was so scary. The scariest one ever, though, was we were in Kenya in 2018, my whole family, and we were deciding whether to leave this area called Kapenguria either on June 4th or June 5th. And for whatever reason, we chose June 4th just randomly. And we took this small plane, it's a 12-passenger plane, over the mountains into Nairobi. You know, I remember thinking, yeah, this is kind of a rough ride, but it's okay. It was a couple days later, we were in South Africa, and we saw the news, and the top news was that same plane, that same flight, the very next day crashed into a mountain and killed everybody on board. And I kept thinking, what if we would have chosen on June 5th? Now, I wonder how people can survive around the world. I went to, just after a big hurricane, I went to the Dominican Republic, went to an area called Barahona, and people there have nothing to start with. And then the water was 8 feet high going through different villages. And people were just wandering aimlessly. And there's nothing there. And I wonder, how are these people going to survive? If you ever went to a country like Zimbabwe, which has nothing, they're going through a famine now. But last time I went, they weren't in famine, but they still had nothing. 90% unemployment. Their money is basically worthless. There's no jobs. And the only thing you live on is growing crops on the property that you own. I mean, how do you live? Can you think of your house growing crops? How do you live a whole year off of that? And now they're in a famine. And I wonder, how is anyone going to survive? And I've been amazed at what God does. I was in Taiwan at a young adult meeting, and they said, "We want to share our testimonies with you." And so each one shared, and they all shared almost the same thing. "I'm 18 years old. I gave my life to Jesus Christ. Everyone in my family is Buddhist. They have disowned me, but Jesus is my all in all in my life." And one after the other basically said the same story. These are 18, 19, and 20-year-olds willing to do that. Women in Kenya who have been brutalized, have been sold as brides at the age of 12, going through abuse, genital mutilation, and coming to a place of rescue where people care for them and give them therapy and education and job training. It's just amazing what people are willing to do for others. Or the Hindustani Covenant Church in India. If you ever want to find out what the best covenant church in the world is, it's in India. I mean, the things they do for people, women in the red light district, people living in the slums, doing small job, you know, giving business loans to people, business training. They're out there. Some of their pastors get killed from time to time, and they are out there doing amazing things. I have learned so much from the Global Church. And one of my favorite verses, which I think is the next slide, is this. We are all citizens of heaven. When we give our life to Jesus Christ, we are all citizens of heaven. That's the citizenship that really matters. Sometimes I wonder if we as Americans forget that. I mean, our American citizenship matters. It's probably 12th, 13th, 25th on the list. And heavenly citizenship, that's like number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10th. This is the citizenship that really matters. And we are citizens with all these global church people. I wanted to ask people around the world, what have you learned good from Americans? And so I actually asked them and I interviewed them. This is what I got from them. Next slide. They shared, hey, you guys are so organized. You're so good with schedules. We wish we were more like that. We love that you're actually punctual. And you're very practical. You're very generous people. You seem like you really love helping people. And you're very creative. When you have an issue, you are able to come up with creative solutions to issues. And they like that. Am I doing something wrong?
You can click through your slides.
Oh, I get my own clicker?
Right there, yes.
I don't know if I can handle that. Right. That's there. Too much. And you always want to do things with excellence. When it says made in America, what you're saying is it's made with quality. Yeah. And we also, this is the one that people are really surprised at. Americans seem to be a very optimistic group of people. I never thought about us that way. But they see us as very optimistic because we always think there's possibilities out there. But I've learned a lot of things from them. And one of the things I've learned, this does work. One of the things that I've learned from them is generosity. They're so amazingly generous. Now, we're known as being very generous too. But we're generous in a different way. We're generous out of a lot of resources. We have a lot of resources, and so we're generous. Now, there's a lot of people around the world who have a lot of resources and are not generous, so yay. We are a generous people. We are a generous people. Sometimes, though, I'm wondering, I hear on the news, or I hear in talk shows, I hear from politicians, I hear things like prosperity, yes, American prosperity, the American dream. And I'm like, is that our main value? Prosperity and the American dream? Is that our gospel now? Our gospel of prosperity? Have we lost the gospel of generosity and we're more interested in American prosperity and the American dream? And I go around the world and I'm amazing how generous they are. It's the way that Jesus was, you know, when he was in the temple and he was watching people give. And people were giving. Remember, the really wealthy people were giving a lot. And the disciples were thinking, now those are the generous people. And then the widow comes up with her two little pennies and puts them in. And Jesus goes, now that's the one who's really generous. And the disciples are like, what are you talking about? And he said, out of her poverty, she gave everything she had. Now that's godly generosity. That's what generosity is like around the world. You know, my wife grew up in a one-room shack in Reynosa. It's hard for me to remember that. There was one bed for the four kids, one bed for the parents. There's the kitchen. Bathroom is an outhouse outside. Cardboard for walls. For some reason, my wife is way more generous than I am. I grew up in America. I'm sort of generous, but she's way beyond me. In her poverty, she learned amazing generosity, just like the widow. I can't believe how people who have no resources are willing to give all that they have. How hard it is for us, with so many resources, how hard it is for us to give. It's interesting. I remember there was a short-term team that went to Honduras, and they stayed in people's homes, and this teenage girl stayed in a family's home, and she really connected with the little girl in the house who was about 5 or 6. The little girl had a doll. It was her favorite toy. It was her only toy. And she slept with that doll every night. And they played together. They really connected. And I remember watching when we were all saying goodbye, and there's a lot of crying, you know. You know how that is. And the team was leaving, and this teenage girl was leaving. The little girl, I saw her run into her house and get her doll. You already know it's going to happen. Ran out and gave the doll to this teenage girl. And the teenage girl bursts out crying and is about to say, I cannot take this. I will cut her off. And I said, you have to take this because God has just taught you the greatest generosity that you will ever see in your life and never, ever forget it. Generosity. You think of this verse here. Give and you will receive. Your gift will return to you in full, pressed down, shaken together to make room for more, running over, poured into your lap. The amount you give will determine the amount you get back. And I personally don't believe that means I give, I will prosper. No, I means that we will give and we will experience the joy and peace that God gives when we're willing to give up everything we've got. I've also learned a lot about hospitality. Now, some of us are real hospitable. I stayed in a really nice house last night with hospitable people. And what's so great in the States is we have, like, spare rooms, right? We can put people in guest rooms. But one thing about hospitality, I don't know if you're like me, but I like to schedule things. And so when I get together with people, whether it's lunch or whether they come to our house, I like to know a few weeks in advance usually. Because my schedule is like 6 months. I'm scheduling way out. And so I like to be hospitable when it's all planned out and I'm ready. And then they come, and I'm really hospitable to them. Now, that's a little different than a lot of places around the world. Because there's a saying in Latin America, mi casa es su casa. Have you heard that? Now, a lot of people think that relates, and it does, to the way Americans say when we're in each other's houses, hey, this is your home. What is the word? What is it we say? Make yourself at home. Thank you. I forgot the phrase. Okay. Which means open the refrigerator, take what you want. I was told that. How cool. But it's way beyond that, you know. Mi casa es su casa is beyond that. It means my house is your house all the time. It means you can show up whenever you want, and I will drop everything for you. Not only will I drop everything for you and interrupt my life, I'll cook. I will do everything I need to do to make sure you are taken care of during that whole time. And not only that, this is what it really means. If you really love me, and if you really are my friend, you will show up at my house unannounced. Because if you don't, that means you don't really love me that much. Mi casa, su casa, that's incredible hospitality. When teams go, when we take teams around the world, I love it when teams stay in people's homes. I wish it was possible in Ecuador, but so far, no. But, you know, when we take them, like the Dominican Republic, when we take teams to the Dominican Republic, if the team said, could we stay in a hotel or a retreat center, that would be one of the most offensive things you could ever say. Because the church would say, why don't they want to stay in our homes? We want to be hospitable to them because mi casa is su casa. And so we love it when teams stay with people's homes in the Dominican Republic. Well, then they don't have guest rooms. So what do? They move out of the master bedroom and they put everybody in one bed, the parents and all the kids, and then the American gets to stay in the master bedroom in the big giant bed with their own bathroom. That's how they do hospitality. It blows me away. Don't forget to show hospitality to strangers, I've learned from the global church. For some who have done this have entertained angels and they didn't even know it. I've learned so much about hospitality. I've also learned a lot, even more, about contentment. Contentment. There's a verse in the Bible from the Apostle Paul. I've learned to be content with whatever I have. I know how to live on almost nothing or with everything. I have learned the secret of being in every situation, whether it's with a full stomach or empty, with plenty or little. For I can do everything through Christ who gives me strength. Now, the interesting thing, what phrase in the United States do we focus on? The last part. I can do anything, everything through Christ who gives me strength. So how do we define that? Well, God gives us success, gives us achievement, really helps us to do what God wants us to do because he gives us the strength. We can do anything. Yeah. But what's the context of the verse? It's contentment. What it's actually saying is, I can be content in all circumstances, no matter what is going on. It's not that God's giving us success. It's not that God's giving us achievement. God can give us contentment no matter what. That is a different way to read that verse. It's amazing how people can be so content. I mean, I am not a content person. I don't know about you, but I'm always striving, always trying to do better, always trying to achieve. I can't help myself. I am always trying to do that. I'm always trying to accomplish things. And there's another thing that's really hard for me is I like being comfortable, don't you? You don't have to admit it. I like being comfortable. And I have to admit, I'm a little entitled. And you know what's funny? This is bad. I wasn't even going to say this. I feel bad, but I fly so much, I'm usually in first class. And I have to admit, I call it peasant class back there. I'm an entitled, horrible person. Sinful, really. And although, this is a side note. I usually sit by kind of really high, like CEO type people then. And I'm like, what do you do? Oh, I'm the CEO of Bridgestone or whatever it is. What do you do? Well, I do community development and we reach out. And they're like, oh, okay. And they get back to reading right away because it's like, what are you doing up here? But anyway, sorry, that has nothing to do with the sermon. But we really, you know, we're always looking for comfort. And to be honest, as Americans, when we go around the world, we tend to be a little entitled. And when things are not comfortable, what do? We complain. We tend to complain or give faces. We do that a lot. Now, I didn't want to go through this with you, but I also interviewed the Global Church. Remember, I asked them what they've learned and like about Americans. I also asked them what they don't like. Their number one thing is this, comfort and entitlement. They can't stand it. So when I take teams around the world, they're so nervous. Oh, they're Americans. That means we have to give them the best food, the best housing, the best transportation. We have to do everything so good for them. Otherwise, we know what Americans are like. And what's interesting, I've learned that other countries are not all like that. You know about Swedes? When they go on short-term trips around the world, they want to rough it. In fact, they're like, yeah, man, I want to sleep on cement. I want to, like, really rough it out there. They love it. The harder, the better for them. They're totally into it. So when I ask people about Swedes, they're like, oh, they're easy. Americans, oh, gosh. Now, Swedes have other issues we won't go into right now. And we won't talk about Koreans, because Koreans, their goal is to suffer as much as possible on trips, and that's even interesting. But they really struggle with our entitledness. I remember a group we had that went to Nicaragua, and you know what? Nicaragua doesn't always have electricity or running water. So we rented this big house for this group, and they did ministry all week in an area where the people never had running water and electricity. And they spent all week loving on these people. But they would come back at night, they would come to this house, and Nicaragua has rolling blackouts, okay? And the water isn't always running. And so, oh, the world was coming to an end every time there was no electricity, there was no water in that house. And at the end of the week, we had our evaluation with that group. I'll never forget them. It was like, how did the week go? And they're like, well, we'll be honest with you. We will never go with your organization again. Because how could you put us in a place with no electricity all the time and no running water all the time? You need to put us in housing that we deserve. And in my mind, of course, you want to say something, but I don't. You're with people without running water all and electricity the whole week. And you couldn't handle it for a few hours every day. We're so entitled. I'd love for you to go to Mozambique. It's one of the fastest growing covenant church groups in the world. There's like over 600 churches. You know, these pastors, what their churches are like, they're just have palm leaves over it, a little bit of mud. People bring buckets and logs from their houses to sit on. Wouldn't that be funny if on Sunday morning all you guys brought buckets and logs to sit on? You should do that one Sunday. And the pastor himself probably walked 15 miles to get there, and then he's going to walk another 15 miles to go to another church and preach somewhere else. And yet, the singing, the worship, the love, the contentment is unbelievable. And Mozambique is a suffering country. And yet there's contentment. You know, a lot of Americans go on these short-term trips, and something they say, which is incorrect, is they're so poor, but they're so happy. It's not happiness. There's just a sense of contentment and peace and joy from God that only God can give to us. It doesn't matter how little or how much money you have, but they just have that connection with God, and they're content. Man, I've learned a lot from them. I've learned a lot about faith and prayer. You know what? When you have a lot of resources and you have an issue, especially when you're a church, let's just say, what do? You form a committee, right? And then you figure out how you're going to utilize your resources to overcome. And then at the beginning of the meeting, though, you do a prayer. At the end of the meeting, you do a prayer. And you kind of believe, but you make plans. You know me, I'm a planner. I pray, but then I plan. I plan my way out of it. What happens if you don't have any resources? What do? You pray, and that's it. Why have a committee? There's nothing to talk about. All you do is pray, and you believe, and you believe, and then God does things. It's pretty amazing. And they pray, and they pray, and they pray. I wish I could be more like that, but it's so hard for me. I have a friend who runs a children's home, and she is super disorganized, and I get mad at her all the time. However, she prays like crazy. And so when they don't have, let's say, milk, she'll pray, and she'll have all the kids pray for milk. And then later that day, a farmer will go by and say, I've got this extra milk. It's going to spoil. Can I leave it with you guys? Sure. And they have milk. Next day, okay, we don't have money to pay the electric bill, 432 pesos. They'll pray. And then someone will come by. I got a bonus at work. I bought a new blah, blah, blah. But I have some leftover money I want to leave with you. How much? Oh, it's a weird number, 432 pesos. Oh, okay, thanks. We'll take it. And then that's how they run their children's home. That's really disorganized. And so when I ask her, I'm like, wouldn't it be better to just be organized? And she goes, really? You'd rather I be all organized than pray and believe that God will answer my prayers on a continual basis? That's how you want me to run my ministry? And I'm like, blah, 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 blah. You can pray for anything, and if you have faith, you'll receive it. I'm not saying, you know, was it name it and claim it thing? I'm not into that stuff, but I wonder how much more we need to pray and have faith that God's going to actually come through, right? Then the last one, this is kind of the weird one, and a lot of people don't like this one. I learned a lot about freedom. I mean, we even sang a song about freedom this morning. Way to go, you knew exactly. About chains. Chains was even in there, baby. Way to go. I've learned a lot about freedom. Because in the United States, I've grown up in the United States, and I'm taught that freedom is a God-given right given to all Americans. Freedom of the press, freedom of worship, freedom of what? I don't even remember the Bill of Rights anymore, but freedoms, right? We talk about freedom, even our national anthem, the home of the free, and free, free, free. We talk about freedom, freedom. I just feel like sometimes in the United States, freedom has become the concept to be able to do what you want, when you want to do it, how you want to do it, where you want to do it. And that's what we're fighting for, to do anything we want, freedom. The thing is, we say that that's God-given, but that's not in the Bible. I'm just letting you know. You know, here's some verses from the Bible that people from the global church have pointed out to me. You're free from your slavery to sin, and you become slaves to righteous living. That's where the chains come off. It's freedom from sin. That's the freedom that God wants us to have to confess our sin and say, I want to be free from all of that addiction to sin, and I want to live a righteous, righteous life. Yeah. And you're free from the power of sin now, and you get to be a slave to God. Wait a second there. Where's that in the U.S. Constitution? Wait, we're supposed to be free from sin and now become slaves to God? Wait, so we're supposed to do whatever God wants us to do instead of what we want to do? Wait a second. And then you've been called to live in freedom, my brothers and sisters, but don't use your freedom to satisfy your own desires. Instead, use your freedom to serve everyone else. So what biblical freedom is freedom from sin, freedom to be a slave to God, to do whatever God wants us to do, and freedom to serve everyone but ourselves. That is what biblical freedom is. And so I've learned from the global church to really question what sometimes we define as in America, what freedom really is. So I've learned a lot from the global church. And so I have a challenge for you, because that was just the opening to the sermon. Now I'm going to do the sermon. I know. And it's only a couple minutes long. Okay? I don't want you to take my word for anything that I've just said. Those are just things I've learned. Okay? In order for all of us to really grow in our relationship with God, and to really expand our view of who God is and how he works in this amazing world, we have to spend time with people who follow Jesus, who don't look like us, who don't act like us, who don't live like us, who don't eat like us, who do not read like us. Even when they read the Bible, they see it maybe even a little interestingly different. And when we spend time with people who are totally different than us, but love Jesus with all their hearts, man, our view of who God is and how he works in this world blows up and expands. Because if you're with people who are like-minded all the time, your view of God is about this big. But when you are with people who are unlike you, man, it expands. That is called, where's our pastor? Proximity. Isn't this great? Remind us what proximity is.
It's here to be close to those that are not like you in any way, shape, or form.
Only God knew that my sermon already was going to be just that, right?
Yes.
Am I on?
You're on.
Proximity. So my challenge is for you to figure out how to do that. You know what's so cool is you live in West Lafayette. Sorry, not Lafayette. I keep being told, we're not in Lafayette, we're in West Lafayette. Okay, so, all right. So, but even in West Lafayette with Purdue, don't you have people from all over the world living here? Don't you have access to all kinds of people? You have really no excuse, no offense, no excuse. You know, maybe if there's other parts of Indiana, it would be harder. But here, man, you could spend all kinds of time with people who are not like you. It'd be so easy. And of course, our country's filling with immigrants. There's a lot of opportunity to spend time with people who are not like us, because our country has like 3 million of them coming every year now, right past my house, because I live on the Mexican border. And can you imagine going to Chicago? Or Gary, Indiana, spending time with people very different than you, but who love Jesus? Yeah. Or Ecuador. Or other places around the world. Spending time with people who are totally not like you, but love Jesus with all their heart. And man, your vision of who God is will go, woo! It might bother some people, you know, but you'll be like, wow, God, thank you. Thank you for what I've learned from the global church. If you're kind of like, I'm not sure really how to do this, I bet your pastor has some great ideas. I bet your church leadership has some great ideas. And if you want to go anywhere in the world, I've got some great ideas. And you know, something that's really This is a new thing going on post-COVID. I'm getting a lot of families with children contacting me saying, we want to spend time with believers.